Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, why can't Tesla sell cars directly to you? A challenge to the middleman monopoly of car dealerships. Also, a very special guest, best-selling novelist Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, on being African-American versus American-African, and other themes from her book Americana about immigration, race, and the American dream. And a Democratic and a Republican governor together defend the Common Core curriculum from the backlash on left and right. But first, what can we learn from the East Harlem building explosion? This is how it sounded yesterday to people near 116th Street and Park Avenue.
Whatever structure was there, totally gone.
I thought it was a bomb. I thought my building was coming down.
It seems like even windows across the train track in those buildings, many of those are blown out.
And the rubble from inside the cars, from everywhere. They was all bleeding. They was all bleeding a lot. They was all hurt.
Over here in this section on Park Avenue, 116th Street, always smelled like there was gas coming out of the manhole covers.
That's how it felt and sounded and smelled yesterday. Let's begin by setting the scene right now with WNYC's Stephen Nesson. Good morning, Steve. Where are you right now?
Good morning, Brian. I'm actually one block from where the building exploded. The whole street is just full of rubble and debris. There's a backhoe that's picking up all the broken building bits and dropping it actually right onto Park Avenue, just to the side of that Metro North train where a lot of debris landed, and now trains are running on that track.
The numbers
There's a lot of smoke in the air here too, Brian. You know, it's still very acrid. People are wearing face masks here because it's very smoky, and the wind, it's a real windy day, so it's just blowing it everywhere.
The figures that I have as of a few minutes ago are 7 people confirmed dead, 8 still missing. Given that there are still people missing and unaccounted for, is this still a search and rescue operation at the scene?
That's what I'm told by police officers on the scene. They say people are still searching, and I saw ambulances heading into the scene this morning as well.
And you describe how hot it is. Is there still a fire burning?
They tell me the fire is still smoldering and that the FDNY is still putting water on it. The smoke, if you're a smoke expert, maybe you can help me out. It's whitish gray, not like black smoke or anything. But it's definitely puffing like there's a, you know, a big furnace going over here.
I guess whitish gray indicates it's not as hot as the black smoke might have been yesterday.
Perhaps, yeah.
What kinds of services are being established there, Stephen, for people in the immediate area?
Sure. Well, initially, the Red Cross set up an emergency shelter at PS 57. That was just a few blocks away from the scene. They moved that to 125th Street and 3rd Avenue. About 44 adults, 25 children stayed there last night. They're going to remain open for, they say, as long as they need to. Most importantly, though, today from 12 until, I believe, 9 tonight, the city is holding a workshop, I guess, for people to go there and find out what services are available to them, what kind of housing vouchers can they get, what kind of money can they receive, and where they can stay until they're able to go back into their homes. For the folks that were evacuated last night, you know, several people weren't allowed to go back into buildings nearby. And, of course, for those whose building is gone today, they're going to be providing answers and ways for you to get help from the city.
Do you have a number of how many people have been left homeless by this explosion or otherwise affected in terms of neighborhood infrastructure?
I do not know, Brian. I know that several buildings, I believe 5 buildings nearby, were told to evacuate for structural reasons until one of the city agencies anyways confirmed that it's okay for them to go back in there.
Can you describe the block? I mean, 116th Street, many people know, even if they're not from there, is a main thoroughfare and commercial strip in East Harlem. East of there, Melissa Mark Viverito's district office is half a block from the building that collapsed. But what's right near there, near the Metro North tracks at Park Avenue? Is that also a business district? There was a piano store, for example, as part of this building, or is it more residential?
It's definitely a good, solid mix. I'm actually looking right now. There's an urban garden center that's right under the Metro North tracks, and that appears to be an entirely wooden structure, still standing. But, yeah, there's all kinds of things, hair salons, a lot of laundromats. I stopped by one this morning, and they said no gas, no heat, no hot water. But a few people are still doing their laundry, bravely. but there's, you know, grocery stores. And a lot of the grocery store is open here, but several of the businesses are closed. A few workers at the, you know, the dollar store were confused about whether they can go in or they can't go in. The manager told them they were there yesterday, and it was a complete mess. So a lot of the businesses certainly were disrupted, and the ones on that block, I believe, are not open today. So 116th between Park and Madison, where the buildings were.
What else is going on that you're reporting on that I haven't asked you about? Anything?
Well, Charlie Rangel, whose district is near here, stopped by this morning to check out the scene. He told reporters he was at the shelter last night and spoke with families, had a prayer session with them. I spoke with some of the families that stayed in the shelter last night. One woman, she said she couldn't sleep. Elizabeth Alvarez, she was there with her two children and their dog, which they managed to get out of their next door building and before they were not let back in. The kids seemed okay. They're glad to go to school today. Also at the scene, Brian, I ran into a 17-year-old girl, Rosalia Mendoza. She was very distraught because she usually is meeting her best friend, 17-year-old Mark Anthony Plaza, she said. And she told reporters, she was asking reporters if they knew of him. We had not heard of Mark Anthony Plaza, but he lived in one of the buildings that exploded, she said. And he hasn't returned any of her text messages. So she was distraught and at the scene this morning.
Unfortunately, more of those stories to come, I fear, with eight people still missing. Although we should point out that Mayor de Blasio emphasized yesterday that some of the people who are still missing may just not have been heard from yet, or they may be disoriented from the blast and not all dead, but not a good sign that at this point there are still eight people missing in addition to the seven confirmed dead. WNYC's Stephen Nesson at the scene in East Harlem. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Joining us now are Erwin Redlener, director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University, and Assemblyman Robert Rodriguez, who represents the area. Assemblyman, good morning. And what would you add to Stephen Nesson's report just there about the conditions in the area right now and the immediate needs of people who've been displaced or otherwise affected?
Well, the conditions are certainly very difficult, particularly in the area that was immediately impacted by the zone. We have approximately 80 units and families who are currently displaced. We hope to have some information for who will be able to return, but certainly the services that are required for people in those apartments are going to be limited. We know of at least five buildings that are certainly without gas right now, and and some of the ones that were impacted by the blast or debris, the windows are currently being boarded up, and repairs will happen, but you know, the folks have not yet been able to return. So really difficult conditions for the residents, certainly something that we have never seen or experienced before. And we're doing our best to cope with what, you know, I think everyone realizes is an extremely difficult situation. And you know, I certainly wanted to give thanks to our fire department and the mayor's office for helping to coordinate the efforts. And they're still on the scene, which is kind of indicative of how big a blast and fire this was, and how difficult the weather conditions have been in terms of trying to, you know, deal with you know, the immediate rescue efforts.
And I understand the mayor will have another briefing later. If that takes place during our show, we'll carry it. But Assemblyman, do you have a homelessness or displacement count? And what can you add is being done for those people?
Well, I think right now the count that we have is 80 families are displaced as of last night. We're expecting that number to go down, because that did include a number of the buildings in the vicinity, and so we know for sure 80 families are impacted, and in those two buildings that were directly impacted, that we know that there's at least 25 families there that we're looking to accommodate for longer-term housing needs because of this.
And what kinds of longer-term housing needs might be available, or housing opportunities might be available to them?
Well, I think we're currently exploring that with HPD. We're certainly reaching out to our local housing providers. There's one building that was immediately adjacent where Hope Community is the property owner. They're a local nonprofit. They're able to place those four families into their existing portfolio. So we're going to be working with everyone we possibly can to try and keep our residents certainly in the community.
Assemblyman Robert Rodriguez from East Harlem with us. Also, Dr. Erwin Redlener, director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at the Mailman School of Health at Columbia University. And Dr. Redlener, from what I gather, we don't know with 100% certainty that the explosion was caused by a gas leak. How certain would you say you are from the information you've seen? And are there any other possible causes that you would consider still on the table?
Hi, Brian. Well, yeah, I think the most likely thing is a gas line leak, but there was some discussion also about the possibility of there being a water main break, which in turn causes flooding and collapse and, affected the gas lines. Problem is the gas lines, of course, are in many of these buildings very, very old and fragile, some of them being, over 120 years old. They are constantly concerned, that is the officials and Con Ed and so forth, about the fragility of these gas lines and are in the process of, a long-term initiative really to repair or replace a lot of the older lines. But in the meantime, we have these infrastructure problems that are not, by the way, confined to New York City, but it's part of a big national concern about the status and stability of infrastructure from gas lines to power grids to, levees and bridges. So it's part of a big big national agenda. But right now, the tragedy that's happened up in Harlem here is pretty significant, with lots of issues that need to be faced now by the folks in the neighborhood.
And Assemblyman, same question. How definite are you and your sources that this explosion was caused by a gas leak?
That looks like the most likely cause. We've certainly heard from anecdotal discussions with some of the residents' concerns about the smell of gas. So that, based on some of that firsthand feedback, I think that inference can be supported. So, but of course, there's an investigation that has to happen. Which building it came from, how it was initiated, are going to be the longer term questions. And on the discussion regarding long term infrastructure, I think we recognize the age of the infrastructure across the different areas, and in particular, when we talk about Con Ed specifically and their efforts, to try and replace something to the area of 30 miles of gas lines per year. I think this will be an important example of where we might be able to potentially think about investing and accelerating those projects if that ultimately ends up being the cause.
And there are thousands of miles of gas lines beneath New York City, and we'll be speaking later in the program to a guest from the Center for an Urban Future, which put out an amazing report this week. And ironically, we just had them on earlier in the week to talk about just this kind of thing hypothetically. And as you probably both know, their report discusses how a quarter of the water that gets into New York City from the big water tunnels from the reservoirs leak out in dribs and drabs before they get to our faucets because of the aged water infrastructure. And Dr. Redlener, you said maybe this was a water main break that then affected the gas lines. And this gas line system is 120 years old. Incredible that we're still using the same energy sources and through the same lines, only gradually being updated, that were used 120 years ago. So can we blame Con Ed for this if it was a gas line explosion? Here is Con Ed Senior Vice President for Gas Operations, Edward Fapiano. Listen to what he says.
We routinely survey streets for gas leaks, and this block was last surveyed on February 28th of this year, and there was no problems detected. We have a program that we use to help determine, based on history of the area, age of the pipe, and actually a number of factors, soil conditions.
So how do we square those two things, Dr. Redlener? If this was a gas line explosion, unless the inspection itself was faulty for some reason, is this a Con Ed fail if they inspected the pipes for functionality and age, or one of those things that couldn't be prevented if there even is such a thing?
Well, right, I think this is going to be the big question, and I think Con Ed is aware of what needs to be done in terms of inspection, but also replacement. It's like the assemblyman was saying that they're doing, I think it's maybe 30 to 50 miles per year of gas line replacement. In terms of their ability to screen for active leaks, that is a technology-related issue, by and large, and there's all the other factors that the gentleman from Con Ed was talking about. But at the end of the day, we're depending on technology. But, you know, in reality, what everyone knows about gas line leaks is that, you know, a certain chemical is added to the natural gas, which itself has no odor in its natural state. So a chemical is added to give it a particular odor that people are able to notice. So actually, you know, you have to give credence to the reports of smelling the gas, and that, in a sense, is potentially more reliable than the formal inspections. That said, I think that Con Ed is aware and is, you know, doing the best it can, as far as I know, but I think this is going to require a lot more very intense formal investigation by real experts.
Dr. Redliner, are you suggesting adding an additional smell to gas in addition to what we already experience as the odor of gas, as some people reported in this case?
Well, no, the odor of gas that you're mentioning, Brian, is actually artificially added.
Ah, so that's what is there.
Natural gas itself. Yeah, so that's what you're smelling. Otherwise there would be really no way of early detection of a potential leak. So a chemical is explicitly added to give it the odor that you and I all think it's, you know, that's a gas leak, and it is a gas leak, but it's because of the chemical in the natural gas that you're actually smelling it. It's called the mercaptan, by the way, is the chemical that's added. So mercaptan is in all the natural gas supplies in the United States, as far as I know, so that anybody anywhere smelling this thing, which smells like leaking gas, is because it's specifically been infused with mercaptan. Mm-hmm. People smell it, and then theoretically they call for help. So the question is, those reports of smelling the gas, did they significantly precede the actual explosion? That the investigation will have to look at that.
Listeners, we have questions coming in via social media and WNYC.org about how to prevent things like this. Or with anything else you want to ask, you can call in 212-433-WNYC or anything you want to say. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. For Irwin Redliner, disaster preparedness and response expert, and Assemblyman Robert Rodriguez from East Harlem, 212-433-9692. And on what you were just talking about, Dr. Redliner, here's a question from Amy in Manhattan. Amy, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. It's not that much a question, really. Once I was outside down the street and I smelled gas, and I called 311 to report it, and they told me call 911. So apparently any time there's enough gas leaking that you can smell it outside, it's an emergency and you should call 911.
Amy, thank you. Is that your recommendation too, Dr. Redliner?
It definitely is. This is the whole point of having this chemical mercaptan in the gas, is so that citizens can do exactly what Amy was just talking about. And it is an emergency, because once you are able to smell it, that means it's probably there in enough concentration that it poses a threat. It won't always explode, but it requires a pretty immediate investigation.
And so Gina on our webpage asks, if one ever does smell gas, should you leave your home or apartment immediately? It seems like these explosions occur very soon after people report gas odors, she writes.
That's a good question. And, you know, the recommendation is that if there's significant smell of gas, you should literally leave right that second, you know, don't turn off the lights. Just go out of the building and make the call. It's important enough that even if you call Con Ed and they can't get there like immediately, they'll call the fire department. So it's considered a significant emergency by the responder systems in New York City and elsewhere, actually.
Can this be caused something? Assembly, one sec. Can this be caused by leaving our stoves or ovens on, or only from the gas lines that are out in the street or coming into the building?
No, it can be caused by, you can smell gas in your apartment or home if you're using natural gas for heating purposes and your stove is operating with gas. That absolutely can
that could be the source
cause it, sure.
of an actual explosion.
Yes.
Assemblyman,
well,
what
is the source of a gas leak or the smell of gas in your apartment?
But not just from leaving the burner on without the flame or something like that?
Yes, it could. I'm
it
saying,
could.
Yes, you can
yes.
smell it. Yeah.
You can.
Yes,
you can smell it, and it can be very dangerous.
Yes.
Assemblyman, what did you want to add?
Sure, is that, you know, many times often people, and this has been said, is that they thought that the smell had dissipated, you know, and you know, many people ignored that or chose to, you know, continue about, you know, their, go back, go to bed, or do different things.
That was a precise story in this case. Somebody said that they smelled gas the night before, then the smell went away, so mm-hmm. they went to sleep, and then there it was again the next morning.
Yeah, so I really want to emphasize that, you know, if you smell gas, please make sure you report it to the proper authorities and to Con Ed, you know, even if you believe it dissipate, you know, and take the necessary measures. You know, it's so serious, and clearly, you know, people didn't have the opportunity, you know, in this instance, you know, to evacuate. But, you know, yeah. So as the investigation, you know, pulls forward with more information, you know, we'll determine, you know, more of that uncertainty. But to those viewers who are listening, I mean, the smell of gas is absolutely serious.
Carol in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Carol.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm familiar with the work of Dr. Redliner, which is wonderful, I might add. But I'm wondering if the infrastructure that he's referring to that needs to be maintained and whatever is not just the gas lines, but affordable and viable housing for people. The past decade or two, the only thing that's developed here is luxury housing, and apparently this started from the federal discontinuing of public housing all the way down. So, I mean, I would like to hear what he thinks about this, because gas lines don't exist on their own.
Yes, and Assemblyman, let me give this one to you first, actually, because the owner of the building and of the piano store at ground level, records seem to show the building had only what reporters are calling an ordinary record of violations, no particular red flags about neglect. Do you know the landlord or have an opinion about her or the condition of the building with respect to this?
Correct. It's not. We have not received, you know, reports on that building in particular as being a particularly problematic building with a lot of violations. And so, you know, specific to that, we have not had previous incidents or connections other than knowing that they're probably the only piano store in East Harlem and have not received any complaints from the tenants. And to the caller's point about infrastructure, you know, that's our biggest issue in East Harlem and a number of other communities that, you know, have been gentrifying. And I think the challenges that we see on a regular basis with the cuts to Section 8, the loss of Mitchell-Lama housing, you know, and is one of those issues that I'm working on as the chair of a Mitchell-Lama subcommittee, is the lack of affordable housing and the aging infrastructure that we have and the need for preservation of existing affordable units. And that's separate and apart from the capital needs regarding keeping these buildings in good repair. But then, you know, just the ongoing need is really an infrastructure need that, you know, I'm glad the governor and the mayor, in terms of his commitment to 200,000 units, are looking at something. It's a vital need, and I'm glad your caller brought that up.
Dr. Redliner, anything to add? Can we completely separate the notion of Con Ed infrastructure as something outside our housing infrastructure, as I think most of the media has been talking about it, or do we need to look at it in the context of how the caller brought it up?
Well, let me just give a little bit more context, Brian, if I could, and maybe to put this in perspective. So a couple of years ago, and actually for a number of years, the American Society of Civil Engineers has been issuing, I think, an annual report now about infrastructure conditions in the whole country. And I think the last statement was that something in the order of $3.7 trillion, that's with a TR, dollars worth of infrastructure repairs is needed in the United States right now because of aging water mains, aging gas lines, bridges with problems, levees, and so forth. all of this is interrelated, and all of it makes us increasingly vulnerable as time goes on and we don't really address these things. And it's easy to put off. It's not politically or probably economically feasible to talk about $3.7 trillion of repairs needed. But if you think about it, if it was a 10-year plan and $370 billion a year would have been an extraordinarily beneficial jobs program, and having the consequence of really making our infrastructure much more resilient and all of us much less susceptible to these kinds of disasters.
So Assemblyman, as a matter of state policy, and you're a state official, is there a budgetary response? Is there more sympathy today than there was a day ago for approving a theoretical Con Ed rate hike request if the money's going to go to replacing more than 30 to 50 miles of pipes a year?
I think we have to look at a number of larger scale alternatives to try and deal with the infrastructure issues that we have here. And I know as an assembly, we have brought forward the idea of infrastructure banks as a possibility. You know, certainly the question of public-private partnerships to deal with $3.7 trillion of overall investment, you know, probably necessary in the United States. So, I mean, I think infrastructure is something that we, you know, continue to figure out how we deal with on a large scale, understanding the limitations of our budget. Certainly I think we are willing to consider, the necessary improvements from Con Ed, for having that result in rate hikes if there's an appropriate plan to bring this forward. And I look forward to, you know, certainly hearing from Con Ed, and I'm sure we'll have ongoing hearings to talk about the infrastructure needs and whether or not that's, necessary and makes sense in the public interest.
And we're now very quickly, 30 seconds, Dr.
Yeah, Redliner. Just we keep fighting this last war. In this case, it's the pipelines for gas, but it's also the water mains and the electrical grid we need to worry about as well. So hopefully we'll take a much more comprehensive view of this whole challenge.
Dr. Irwin Redliner from the Center for Disaster Preparedness at the Mailman School of Health at Columbia University. Assemblyman Robert Rodriguez, who represents East Harlem, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Brian.
And we're now getting some IDs for the first time of some of the people killed in the explosion. Hunter College identified one victim as Griselda Camacho, a security officer who worked at the Silberman School of Social Work. Hunter, in a statement on its website, said Camacho, 45, had worked for the college since 2008. Also killed was Carmen Tonko, 67, a dental hygienist, her cousin. News 12 cameraman Angel Vargas said the family started a frantic search when she didn't show up for work on Wednesday. And Mexican officials said two of the victims came from the country's central state of Puebla. Authorities in Puebla identified them as Rosora Barrios Vasquez, 43, and Rosora Hernandez Barrios, 22. New York City police had put Hernandez Barrios' age as 21. The Puebla authorities did not say whether the women were related. The bodies of three unidentified men were also pulled from the rubble, authorities said, and eight people remain missing as of now. We'll continue our coverage of the explosion in East Harlem later in the program. Coming up next, a Democratic and a Republican governor defend the Common Core curriculum from the backlash on the left and the right. Stay with us. It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And back with us for a few minutes now for the second time this week is Jonathan Bowles, director of the Center for an Urban Future. Remember, we were just talking to him Tuesday about the center's new report called Caution Ahead about the city's deteriorating infrastructure and the need for attention to maintenance. So good morning, Jonathan. And sure enough, there is a detailed section of your report, which we did not discuss on Tuesday, on the aging gas line infrastructure in the city. What's the big picture?
Good morning, Brian. Well, you know, it's not great. Like water mains and bridges and school buildings, the city's gas infrastructure is one of the oldest in the country. The average age of the city's gas mains are 56 years old, and more than half of the city's gas mains are made of unprotected steel or cast iron, which are the most leak-prone materials. So we don't know yet exactly what caused the explosion up in East Harlem, but you know, there have been reports that a 127-year-old cast iron gas main was servicing those collapsed buildings. So, you know, this is one of those instances where you know, we really may have seen a tragedy as a result of our deteriorating infrastructure.
Con Ed has a replacement program that they boast about as being strong, replacing, I think they say, 50 miles per year of pipe, and you say in your report 30 miles of pipe per year, so let's assume something in that range. But how does that compare to the need?
Well, look, I give them credit. They really are doing this, and they have this target. The challenge is that there are more than 1,000 miles of gas mains just in the Con Ed portfolio that were built before 1960. So the need is huge. We have a very old gas main infrastructure in New York. And to be clear, it's not all failing all the time. It's not breaking down. And there's not accidents every week. But this is a risk when you have an aging infrastructure. And I think that Con Edison is doing a good job. But I'd love to see them accelerate and have a more aggressive replacement schedule.
So if it's 1,000 miles of pipes and 50 miles replacement a year, that would be total replacement in 20 years. Maybe that's okay, or are you saying that's too slow?
Well, I think it is too slow. I mean, it's certainly a risk. I think that Con Edison has shown that, you know, some of their older mains hold up very well. You know, it's hard to say that everything before 1960 or 1950 needs to be replaced right away. They do a lot of testing and surveying of their mains. But, you know, I think that we should see a more aggressive a target for replacement of their gas mains. These unprotected steel and cast iron mains are more leak prone. In 2012, we saw nearly 6,000 gas leaks in New York City, not just in the Con Ed portfolio, but citywide, and that's too many, if you ask me.
And they couldn't be turning over the whole system of pipe every 20 years, as that math would indicate, because your report says the average length of pipe is over 50 years old today. Do I have that right?
The average is 56 years old, yes.
So they're obviously not doing 50 miles a year on just 1,000 miles of pipe, which would mean it all gets turned over every 20 years. It's a lot slower than that. Are we using it's amazing in a way that this system was originally begun to be laid in the 1880s. Now we're talking about fracking for natural gas as the next big thing in American energy. So it looks like there's going to be more and more need for this infrastructure, would you say?
Natural gas is in great demand, and I see this being, you know, the future of New York. And so not only is this a safety issue, this is really about the city's economic competitiveness, and we have to expand and really strengthen our natural gas infrastructure in New York City. The challenge is that, as we say in the report, it costs about $2 million to $8 million to repair a single mile of gas mains in New York City. And so, you know, that's a challenge, and it may mean that we're going to have to see rate increases to get this infrastructure brought up to date.
So you want the members of the state legislature, if that's who does it, or the Public Service Commission in Albany, which regulates the utilities, to get behind Con Ed and the other utilities and say, hey, let's have a rate hike for the sake of preventing these explosions like happened in East Harlem yesterday. Are you advocating that at the Center for an Urban Future?
Yeah. I mean, well, first of all, New Yorkers pay some of the highest electricity costs of the nation, so that certainly has to be taken into account. But yes, I mean, I'd much rather prevent these kind of tragedies happening in the future. And so, you know, if it means having rate hikes that are sensible, that go straight into investment of new infrastructure that's safer, by all means, we should do that.
And I should say, as we mentioned earlier in the program, that there's not 100% certainty at this point that it was a problem with gas line infrastructure that caused this explosion. That seems to be the leading suspect, but there are other theories, like that a water main break might have led to a collapse of a kind of run into a gas line, and that caused the explosion. But even that, I guess, would indicate another aspect of the infrastructure, right?
Yeah, this really has to be a priority. I think Mayor de Blasio, Governor Cuomo, other officials in New York really have to take a close look at the aging infrastructure because, you know, most of the time the problem really leads to just disruptions, inconveniences for New Yorkers. But from time to time, we have a risk that this kind of tragedy can happen. And so, city and state officials really have got to do something about this.
Jonathan Bolus, director of the Center for an Urban Future. This is not the kind of I told you so moment that you relish, I presume.
Not at all.
His report just came out earlier this week on the aging infrastructure in New York City of all kinds of things, water mains, gas lines, other things that he said are in desperate need of more attention and more maintenance and more repair. Center for an Urban Future's Caution Ahead report. Jonathan Bolus, thanks a lot.
Thank you.